Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every Friday, right around this time, Major Gehr from CBS joins us. I want to get to the president. I want to get to Jimmy Carter's funeral and other items. But you are the Southern California native. You're from San Diego, but L.A. is not far away. You've spent many, many days and weeks of your life in Los Angeles. You know these areas extraordinarily well. When you're watching from the opposite side of the country, this devastation. 10,000 structures gone, 10 people dead, just enormous areas, reports of an arsonist with at least one of the fires, the debates that have taken place, but areas that are gloriously beautiful, that are iconic in America, which will they be rebuilt? How long will it take? What will they look like different? As a native of that part of our country, what has struck you most?
Heartbreak. I'm kind of at a loss for words for the acute, individualized human suffering that no matter how many journalists come to Los Angeles, you won't be able to capture all the stories. I have been communicating all week via email and text with my friends in Los Angeles. Every single one of them lives in an area just outside of the known and existing wildfire zone, which means their homes are still intact, their lives are still intact, their livelihoods are still intact, but they're all living in fear and have all, as many Southern Californians have learned to do, prepared their emergency evacuation kits, their clothes, their belongings, their legal papers, and are all prepared at an instant's notice to evacuate. This is a manifestation of the different world we are living in relationship to our climate. And it is not any longer debatable. What you believe or don't believe about the antecedents to this, our weather patterns are changing and they're not going to change back to the ones we used to know. There have been lots of wildfires in California for the past decade. The most damaging wildfires in my state's history have all occurred in the last 10 years.
Yep.
A wildfire in an urban environment propelled not by 40-mile-an-hour winds, 50-mile-an-hour winds, which are the typical wind gusts for a Santa Ana situation. Everyone who's ever grown up in Southern California knows what a Santa Ana weather situation is. That's 30, 40, 50-mile-an-hour winds. They're gusts and they're ferocious. Double that. 80, 90, 100-mile-an-hour winds?
Yep.
You're defenseless. You can't put any air assets in the sky, meaning you cannot drop any water or fire retardant. Means you are compelled to fight fires on the ground. When you fight fires on the ground and the winds are blowing that rapidly, embers from one fire blow not 50 feet, Chad, but a mile or 2 miles.
Exactly.
Landing well beyond any conceivable fire break you might construct if you're a firefighter on the ground. And when you're pulling water from fire hydrants for 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, 10 hours, 15 hours. Oh, and by the way, while you're pulling that water, residents, understandably, in other adjacent areas are pulling water through their fire hoses to try to wet down their roofs in a completely understandable methodology to try to save their structure.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what happens to available water supplies?
Yes, exactly.
They run out.
Yep.
They run out. This is a matter of physics. Pure and simple.
Supply and demand.
It has nothing to do with available water resources in Northern California.
Yes.
As officials in Los Angeles has said if you filled up the entire Rose Bowl with water, it wouldn't be sufficient under these particular emergency circumstances. Okay? And Los Angeles will rebuild. There's no question about it. And how it rebuilds and what allocations it makes in terms of regulation, low-income housing, high-income housing, all those things are going to be reassessed. Will Los Angeles have to build larger water tanks, not for daily use, because they have enough water for daily use? Los Angeles has always had enough water for daily use. That's how it's grown so much. But you have redundancies that are 3-4 times daily use at all the cost and maintenance required simply to adapt and prepare for the potential of urban wildfire realities. These are questions that are going to have to be asked and answered. But right now, it is a massive, heart-wrenching human tragedy, the scale of which Los Angeles has never seen before. This is like the equivalent of the Great Chicago Fire. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, hear me when I say this. It's not contained.
No, not even close. And I'll say this because I totally understand what you're saying about these giant reservoirs. But I'm going to go back to what you said. And we had a really compelling interview yesterday with our mutual friend, Jamie Ukas, who was right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And you said it. When the winds blow at 70, 80, 90, and as they registered in Malibu one point at 99 miles per hour, I don't care how much water you have.
You cannot stop
it at that time. It is not possible. No. You cannot be near it. You are putting the firefighters, law enforcement, all at risk. You have no idea about the ferocity and when it's going to slow down. Some of this, we can have a political conversation. We can also tell facts because what's happening with smelt in Northern California has nothing to do with Southern California, which is what you were alluding to. But some of it is just beyond our control because the climate has changed and it is a tinderbox and it is dangerous at 40, 50, double it. It is beyond perilous.
It's beyond perilous. And California in the 70s went through strange episodes of apartment fires jumping from roof to roof. Why? Because developers back then, I well remember this, put on the roofs of apartment complexes wooden shingles soaked in creosote to repel rainwater.
Yeah.
Well, then we all learned to our horror that those things really catch on fire really quickly. Okay? So different building codes and methodologies were built to have things that are less fire susceptible. It doesn't matter. And one other thing, anyone who's ever done any research, and I've not covered a lot of wildfires. I did that early in my career as a police reporter in Las Vegas, just tiny bits of things going on in California. I don't have great experience in this, but Jonathan Vigliotti, one of our most trusted correspondents
really good
at CBS News, has. He wrote a book about this. And when wildfires begin to really develop momentum, they create their own weather system. They create their own internal wind patterns.
Yep, I've
heard
about
those internal wind patterns are fueled by larger than life fuel patterns, meaning wind, 80, 90 miles an hour. It's genuinely, physically, this is physics speaking, impossible to stop. Impossible to stop. And everyone is helpless. All those beautiful homes on the Pacific Coast Highway,
They're
right next to the water, just like in Lahaina. Yeah. They're right next to the water. Doesn't matter.
Mm-mm. Yeah. The water's right there. Yeah, you're exactly right. All right, let's pause, come back, and talk about Donald John Trump, the former and future president, what happened today, and how he has escaped not one, not two, not three, but four cases. And they're all going bye-bye. They're all gone. And he is going to step into the office of the presidency in days, and his sentence today was an unconditional discharge, no time behind bars, no fine, no probation, another victory for Donald Trump. Major, back with us in minutes on CCO. On a video screen, the president-elect appeared with his attorney through that screen in court with Judge Juan Merchant. We knew already that the president was not going to face anything of consequence, even though he was found guilty and convicted of 34 felony counts. The sentence was an unconditional discharge. So no bar, no time behind bars, no fine, no probation. And as I said before the break, you think about this case and the other cases, Major, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and you wondered what would happen with the Jack Smith and the federal cases and what would happen with Atlanta and what would happen here, let alone, let's not forget the financial matter of what he would say the value of his investments are to a banker versus what he would say on his tax returns. And he still is facing significant fines there, and we'll see where that goes. But on these other four, he went 4 for 4.
Mm-hmm. He most certainly did. And we've had for the last 18 months this collision between the law and politics. And Trump had two strategies, one political, nakedly political, and one legal. Legal was delay, delay, delay. Political was point to your persecution, which never ends. Why? Because you keep delaying things.
Yes.
So you continue to point to the boogeyman of persecution, even though if you could vindicate yourself in court, most people I know who believe they can swiftly vindicate themselves in court want to get there as rapidly as possible.
Get it out of the way.
But no. And this was a very methodical, intentional process. Delay the legal proceedings, point to the legal proceedings as evidence of your persecution, and make the larger political argument, believing that if you are vindicated politically, you will prevail legally. That was the strategy, and it has come to fruition. And there will be a long-running debate about whether or not the New York case should have ever been brought. Mm-hmm. Prosecutors have discretion. Prosecutors have the means by which to make those decisions. One prosecutor made that decision. Another one before him didn't. Cyrus Vance. But a jury, once that prosecutorial decision was made, had every ability to look at the evidence and say, no, this isn't a crime, and we're not going to convict him. And plenty of prosecutors know what you risk when you put a case before a jury. You could lose and be humiliated on things of great consequence. You never know what a jury is going to do. But a jury, having looked at everything, sifted everything, staring at the former president, future nominee of the Republican Party, weighed all the evidence, weighed the law, and the precedent, said, you know what? You did it. You're guilty. You're guilty. You're a felon. And the only thing that will the only residual artifact of that is, though not sentenced, not placed on probation, not fined, not a half a minute in any jail cell, he's still a convicted felon. That will not be erased from the record of President-elect Trump, soon to be 47th President of the United States. He will always point to it as evidence of a vicious persecution. Those who believe this case was legitimate will always say it's some shred or veil of accountability. But we have reached a place in our country now where if you win politically, you can triumph over the application of the rule of law. And I would say for this president and for any future president, that's a more dangerous place than we have historically been.
There is not a shred of doubt that these cases, and they could have turned out significantly worse for Donald Trump, in the end aided him in his victory, because I was targeted. They're coming after me. If they're coming after me, they could come after you. And it resonated with plenty of people. Now, did it only resonate with the voters he already had? It certainly did. But it aided with others. How much? I don't know. With Jack Smith and this debate here on whether we will see his summary reports, Judge Cannon is involved in this again out of Florida. There was a minor delay. I think it was like a 3-day delay of some sort. Where are we at with this? And do you think we're going to end up seeing the summary from Jack Smith. And also, oh, by the way, is Merrick Garland going to address the media? Because a lot of Democrats are mad at him. Why didn't you file these charges against Donald Trump sooner? He has not made himself.
Why did you wait for the January 6th committee, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, you had the evidence. You could have done it. You have this thing called the Department of Justice. You could have used your investigators. You waited until the January 6th committee. Do you expect him to talk at some point?
I don't know about that. I don't know if Merrick Garland is going to face any sort of scrutiny, public or otherwise, or just walk out the door and leave things as they are. But the report's going to be out. There's no question in my mind the report's going to be out, as it should be out. The Hur report came out.
Yep,
The Hur report came out on not charging President Biden. I don't remember any Republicans saying, my gosh, that should never have come out. Yep.
Wasn't favorable to Joe Biden either, right?
Quite the opposite. No, not at all.
He doesn't have his faculties. I'm not going to charge him because I'm not certain he really knows what's going on.
Precisely. So the report's going to come out, and it should, under precedent and law. That President-elect Trump doesn't want the public to see it, again, goes back to this point I made earlier. If you have done, quote-unquote, nothing wrong, you want to get into court, you want to establish the facts. If you have a case of selective prosecution, you make those facts, you show all the evidence that vindicates you, and you take your chances. But no, he never wanted to do that. Not on the documents case, not on the January 6th case, on any case. Delay, point to the continued, quote-unquote, persecution as your political foil. The Jack Smith report is going to come out. What Merrick Garland does or doesn't do, and the annals of the Justice Department under Merrick Garland's watch will have two verdicts very quickly. One, you went after all these so-called low-hanging fruit prosecutions in January 6th, creating the impression that you were going after little guys, maybe too aggressively, maybe too harshly. Whether that's true or not, that was certainly the impression. And you had to know that President-elect Trump was going to fuel it because all those people supported him. So he was going to be right out there saying they are being too harshly prosecuted. And then you wait for him. So you don't create the pyramid of responsibility that is comprehensible to the American public. The pyramid of responsibility starts at the top of the pyramid, not at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
The Merrick Garland Justice Department turned that completely upside down and has results that are not only injurious to the rule of law, because if they're all pardoned, because the top of the pyramid says so, because he got reelected, that all that work and effort is laid to waste, and you never held to account the person singularly and most visibly and evidently responsible for all the things you prosecuted that flowed from it.
Let me jump in. I've got about 2 minutes to go. We all became body language experts yesterday during the funeral for Jimmy Carter, where Barack Obama and Donald Trump just kept talking. And some would acknowledge Donald Trump, some would not acknowledge. Some showed, some did not. You've covered all these individuals. What did you think about how that all played out, one of those rare moments when we get former presidents and former first ladies and almost presidents all this close together?
I won't say that I felt sympathy for President-elect Trump, but I know his personality well enough to know that he was steaming at the lack of recognition. And he will be saying to himself through gritted teeth, don't talk to me about all this institutional norm stuff. I'm the president-elect. I should have been recognized. Everyone there should have recognized me, shook my hand, looked me in the eye, and said congratulations, and allowed me to participate in these larger conversations about the mourning and the respect for Jimmy Carter. And it didn't happen. Obama did, because he was seated next to me. I know, and he knows, and we both know he had to play nice with me because he was right next to me. Michelle wasn't next to him. He was by himself. He had no choice. But everyone else had a choice, and they all stiffed me. So all the stuff about institutional norms and collegiality and respecting things, I don't get it. It never comes my way. And he will seethe about that in ways that will not be productive for him or for the future of his presidency. It's not a huge moment. I'm not saying I felt sorry for him, but I know how he thinks about these things. And he's like, hey, I'm the president-elect. I'm here. And you're all still giving me the icy stare treatment?
Yep.
What is that about? If we're talking about this presidency and this continuation, you just so showed the world again that you don't consider me worthy of that continuation. I've earned through the democratic process the right to be the next president of the United States. And here, not in a courtroom, not in some other convention hall or some other place where you might give a speech or in the halls of Congress, but here, can't you for 5 seconds show me something commensurate with this office? And they didn't. And I know it ticks him off.
I also know that's how I feel when we're together, when you will not give me that. Same respect. Dave knows too. I cry.
I won't give you the W belly slap.
Yeah. It's a little more forceful. That's what I get. All right. Go Chargers. I know you're a big Chargers guy.
Oh my God. Please, Texans, rout them. 52-0. I beg of you, please.
Hit the button, Dave.
Bury them.